Current State on 90.5 WKAR. Welcome back. 90.5 classical producer and afternoon music host Jody Knoll joins me now with a story about an unusual choir of men and boys based in Grand Rapids who will present a Lenten season program this Friday and Saturday at St. Andrew's Cathedral in downtown Grand Rapids. Jody, welcome to Current State.
Hi, Mark. Thanks.
You have a connection to this choir. Tell us about it.
I do. Well, my friendship with the Grand Rapids Choir of Men and Boys director Scott Boscher goes back nearly 40 years when we sang together in choirs and musicals at Grand Rapids Christian High. That friendship grew at Calvin College, where we traveled with the Calvin Capella Choir to England during a January interim to study the English choral tradition. Scott now conducts the Grand Rapids Choir of Men and Boys, who've brought in the director of the St. John's College Choir, Andrew Nethsinger, to be in residence this week, culminating in two concerts this weekend. St. John's College Choir is at Cambridge University in England and is considered one of the finest choirs in the world. I spoke with both Scott and Andrew earlier this week. Andrew's father, Lucian Nethsinger, grew up in Sri Lanka, where he was a boy treble in an Anglican choir there. He went on to study in Cambridge, England, and later became organist and choir master of Exeter Cathedral, where in turn his son Andrew was a choir boy. Andrew studied organ and choral conducting and served as organist under the legendary George Guest at St. John's College Choir. In 2007, he returned to lead the choir. I began by asking Andrew about the history of St. John's College.
It dates back, in a sense, 800 years to an infirmary that was there on the site. But the college itself was founded by Lady Margaret Beaufort in 1511. So we're relatively new, only 503 years. Yeah.
How about the choir itself?
And the choir's even newer, yeah. Didn't start until the 17th century.
Well, George Guest led the St. John's Choir for 40 years, from 1951 to 1991. Guest had a similar pathway to yours in that his father, too, was a cathedral organist, though his roots were in Wales. The boy sopranos, or trebles, as they're known in your line of work, under George Guest took on what's been called a continental sound. How would you describe that sound and how it differs from other English choirs?
I think probably his two greatest influences were Boris Ord, who ran the choir at King's College, and George Malcolm, who ran the choir at Westminster Cathedral. And it was the Westminster Cathedral one that was the very edgy so-called continental sound, but more influenced by the great boys' choirs of Germany and Austria, for instance. But I think what George created was—it's hard to pigeonhole. It was unique, a unique combination of those two sounds and a wonderful expressiveness and fragility of the sound, and emotion in the sound.
You have released a number of recordings with the choir since you've been there, reminiscent of the prolific recording days of George Guest. Are many people purchasing CDs, choral CDs, these days?
Well, our CDs still do very well, but I think CD sales internationally are going down, aren't they? You know, as people acquire more music online and through iTunes and all that sort of thing. But I find it slightly bewildering that people younger than us acquire their music in different ways. And I suppose there may come a time when we no longer make CDs. When I was organ scholar, I played the organ for the last ever LP that St. John's College Choir made.
Really?
I slightly fear I might be involved in the last ever CD, but it's no time soon. So I'm trying to continue that sort of pioneering, spreading the word about St. John's that George started. And the latest manifestation of that, of course, is through the internet. We sing about 200 services a year in our chapel. We record them, and then we choose about 52 or so to webcast every week on our choir website, and then people all around the world can listen. And I like to think that's the sort of thing George would have done had he lived a generation or two later.
In some ways, having a choir of men and boys may seem anachronistic. Why go to all the trouble to train these boys to sing in this tradition when inevitably their voices will change in a few short years? Why not just use girls?
Speaking as someone who has two very musical daughters, I am extremely eager for there to be a similar tradition for girls. And indeed, since 1991 was the time when the first major cathedral girls' choir was started in Salisbury. And since then, I should think 20 or 30, maybe even more than that, cathedrals have founded superb girls' choirs. There are some girls' choirs in Cambridge for young girls. There isn't yet one that does seven services a week like we do at St. John's or King's. And I would love to see a choir like that start in the next 20 years while I'm there. But in terms of boys, you know, I'm all for equal opportunities. But if you ask children in school to join a choir, you would get more girls joining than boys, because there's a danger that it's seen as just a sort of girly thing. So I think it's rather important to create an opportunity specifically for boys, as Scott has done and as we do in Cambridge. There is something magical about boys' voices just because of their fragility. They're only going to last until they're 13 or 14. I can't really think of anything else that children do where they're going to peak at 14 and then never be able to do that activity again for the rest of their lives.
Another place you served as organist was Wells Cathedral, which I understand is one of the highest-ranked choirs in the world right now. It was there that you met our other guest today, Grand Rapids native Scott Boscher. Let me turn to you, Scott, and let me ask you how you came to sing in that illustrious choir.
Well, I first fell in love with the tradition when I was a student at Calvin College. And in fact, with you, we went on an English choir tour on an interim and went to King's and St. John's. And actually, we sat and watched George Guest direct the choir. Poulenc Motets, I think it was. And I just could not get that sound out of my ear. So decided that after I finished my graduate work, I really wanted to go back and do it, and came to Wells Cathedral. And it was a really wonderful fit for me and my family, and spent 3 years singing there. And Andrew was our assistant organist, choir master, and sang for Andrew for those years. And it was just an amazing experience.
You now direct the Grand Rapids Choir of Men and Boys. How long has that choir been in existence, and when did you take over?
This coming fall will mark our 25th anniversary, so we're coming up on a quarter century, we're pretty pleased with that. I took over initially in 2001. At that point, it was a choir that was serving more the other arts organizations of Grand Rapids, for the symphony and the ballet and the opera, whenever they needed children to sing. And I started steering the ship a little bit back more towards doing church services in the Anglican tradition. And then we couldn't quite get the energy for that going, so it nearly petered out there for a couple years. And then about 6 years ago, we got a resurgence of families who said, let's get back and do this right in the real Anglican cathedral tradition. And I said, I'm all for it. Let's go for it. And there's been no turning back. The response has been fantastic. We're now up to close to 60 singers in the choir. And having people like Andrew come on a fairly regular basis, along with others like Martin Neary. And we're in conversations right now with Stephen Clearberry to find a date for him to come in the near future. So it's very, very exciting.
As you mentioned, your choir has a main focus of church music and services such as Evensong, but yet you're not affiliated with a church.
We aren't. In fact, just as I guess they call Westminster Abbey a royal peculiar, we're a little bit of a royal peculiar here in the United States. There are quite a few RSCM, Royal School of Church Music Choirs, and every single one of them is associated with a church. We are the only one that got a charter, and it took us 3-4 years to get it, that we are an RSCM chartered choir that is a nonprofit arts organization. So we're a bit unusual, but it's wonderful because our boys and our men come from probably 17 different denominations across West Michigan. Our boys, we have about 38 boys singing right now, and they come from about 27 different schools, private, public, charter. So we're a bit of a mutt, I guess you could call us, but it is just a wonderful coming together of people who love this tradition and love to really work at perfecting their skills.
You have concerts this Friday and Saturday in the spectacular acoustics of St. Andrew's Cathedral in downtown Grand Rapids. This week, you brought in Andrew Netzinger to put the finishing touches on the music. Which one of you chose the music and what is on the program?
We went back and forth a little bit because I know the boys and their capabilities. I kind of propose a program to Andrew, and then he can do thumbs up or thumbs down. But we initially put it together, and one of the kind of skeletons of the structure that we're doing is Bob Chilcott's from the Kingsingers, his new St. John Passion. We hope to, in the near future, do the entire work, but we're just kind of wading into it a little bit now. We're doing 3 sections from the Passion and breaking them up and kind of spreading that across the entire evening and then inserting other works, Henry Purcell anthems, Lati's Crucifixus, all this incredible music that's been written for Passion Week through the centuries.
Andrew, why have you come to work with the choir in Grand Rapids? What do you get out of it?
Oh, well, it's great to see Scott again, and I'm full of admiration for this amazing project that he does with setting up a choir along the English lines so very, very successfully here in Grand Rapids. As I think you said at the start of the interview, you know, I've been brought up in this whole tradition right from day one of my life, really, and I'm hugely privileged to be a part of the tradition in England, which has continued for so many centuries. I mean, similar traditions in France and Italy, for instance, have been rather less durable. So I'm hugely privileged to have absorbed all this experience. And if I can spend a bit of time actually sharing the knowledge I've been privileged to acquire, the experience with others, then that's great for me.
Scott, you don't charge admission to your concerts. Why is that, and what is your funding model?
Well, the music that we put is from the English cathedral tradition. And although we're not a religious organization, we're a 501c3 arts organization, I always have the feeling that what we're doing really is music that feeds people's souls. This is music of such a deep spiritual feeling, and so to charge for that to me seems wrong. For those that can't, we have a free will offering, and for those that can't afford, please come be our guest, absorb this music, let us feed your soul, let us give you something back. And then we find that there's a lot that do have the means to be able to give well, and actually probably put in more than they would if they were purchasing a ticket. It all comes out. We've been very, very blessed as an organization by, as you know, the philanthropic community of West Michigan is very, very generous, and we feel that we need to be generous back to that West Michigan community by offering it as a gift. Lord.